Whoever said it was easy. Hey, everybody, I'm Percy. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Grateful to be here, grateful to be sober, grateful for everything I once took for granted. My sobriety date's October 4th, 1987, and through the grace of these rooms, my higher power, I have not had to pick up a drink today, and for that I am truly grateful. I want to thank Tim for asking me to speak. I spoke here a few years ago. It's been a while. I don't do this very often, but it's fun to get up in front of y'all, and I am a musician by trade. I'm a singer-songwriter. Some of my songs are about recovery, because that's kind of all I know. I've been sober longer than some of you have been alive. Been sober a long time. And so I want to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'm going to focus on the steps, because that's what I do. Okay, so anyway, but first of all, I was born here in Atlanta. Both my parents were from down here in Georgia, and my father was a lawyer in the Air Force, so I spent my early childhood in North Africa and Morocco as a small child, and then we moved back to D.C. area, and my father left the military and became a Unitarian minister, and he was actually, so my childhood was like a radical childhood. My father went to Howard University in 1964, the only white man in his class, so that was kind of a different kind of an upbringing than a lot of people get. I was 12 when I started getting high, because we had a theater company on the property of the church, and I had an older sister, and you know, and it was the 60s, and it was pot, and everybody smoked pot, and so I started smoking pot, like my sister did, and I kind of liked it. It was fun, and I drank a little bit, and I smoked a little pot, and then we moved up to Boston, Massachusetts, and then I'm really smart, and the reason I tell you that is it's not really a gift. It can really get in your way, especially in recovery. So I actually went to college when I was 16 years old, and I went to Hofstra University on Long Island for theater. I was going for music, and this was back. I actually went to college in 1969 because I'm 72 years old. I look great. I know. I do. Do it for vanity, if for no other reason, girls. Okay, that's what I always say. Do it for vanity. Anyway, so I got signed by a famous guy when I was 19 years old for a publishing deal in New York by a guy named Bobby Darin, who was like a famous 50s guy. And I was a songwriter, and I thought I was really, really cool. And I was 19, and, you know, who knew, you know, the world, and I thought I was going to be a big star. And guess what happened? He died 6 months after I was signed. So I didn't get that career. Didn't happen. Okay, interesting. But that's, you know, I was going to be Linda Ronstadt. Didn't happen. However, you know, I did drink some alcohol. I did take some drugs, and drugs are part of my story, because back then we took all kinds of stuff. You know, we took everything. And, but I was a cheap drunk, not an expensive drunk. I'm only 5 feet tall, you know, and I couldn't manage a lot. Some people were like, you don't drink enough to be an alcoholic. It's not how much you drink, it's what happens to you when you drink. And I like to take drugs too, and you know, they would be checking my pulse and all that sort of stuff, because I was living in New York City, you know, amongst the wild, crazy people. I mean, it was insane. And right at the end of my college career, I ended up, ladies, but I ended up in the wrong bed, you know what I mean? And so I said, I'm going to quit this. So I said, I'm going to quit drinking and I'm going to quit drugging. And I'm not going to, so I gave up hard liquor and drugs when I was about 20. But who knew about wine? I mean, in those days, we didn't know. I'd never heard of AA. I knew about heroin addiction because it was the Vietnam War, and all these guys that I knew were heroin addicts, because that's what, you know, in New York, everybody, my girlfriend's boyfriend was one of the big drug dealers, and, you know, everybody, we were like running with the big boys. Everybody was playing hard and playing fast, and it was insane. But I knew it would kill me. I could feel it even way back then. And I will mention, the first time I ever drank, I was in the fourth grade, and I had a cold. And my mother's dear friend gave me a big tablespoon of bourbon with sugar in it, you know, for the cold, right? I remember what that felt like going down. I don't remember my fourth grade teacher's name, but I remember that. And this is when you start to put those pieces together of, wow, this isn't normal. You know what I mean? This is, you know, why do I remember that burning sensation from the fourth grade? Why do I remember that? Maybe I'm an alcoholic. Okay, so I have no idea I was an alcoholic, and I had given up hard drugs and liquor, and I'm only doing white wine, and New York had gotten so insane, and, you know, I was in a famous band called Kid Creel and the Coconuts, and that was just, I just couldn't take it anymore. So I called my father, who is a minister now in Virginia, and said, "Daddy, can you come get me in New York?" Because he was in Virginia, and he said, "Can't you make it home?" I went, "No, I couldn't make it home." So I'm getting close. I'm in my late 20s. I'm about 28, 29 years old, and I can't make it home. You know, I can't get on the train because I was taking all kinds of stuff, and I was a mess, and I wasn't sleeping and all that kind of stuff. But was I in trouble? No. And ladies, I got away with it. You know, I was pretty, and I was white, and I was, you know, had money, and I, you know, I didn't have to pay for things. So I got away with it. You know, I didn't get busted. I didn't, none of that happened to me. However, the alcohol and drugs get you anyway. It doesn't matter, Yale or jail. You know, you can end up in trouble. So what happened to me was I moved back to Virginia, and my daddy came and got me and brought me home, and I got in a band down in Virginia and ended up marrying my drummer, and we went and made a record over in Athens and whatnot and came back, and it was getting worse. The wine was getting worse, and I had a blackout. Now, I was not a blackout drinker from the beginning. Some of you are. I have friends that call it time travel. You know, they just time travel. They blacked out from the jump. That did not happen to me. I was a little bit older when I had my first actual blackout. I had brownouts. You know what a brownout is? Okay, where you're kind of can't remember and you're calling up to piece it back together. You know, lots of those. Lots of those. But I had finally, I had a blackout, and it scared the shit out of me. I was afraid. You know, it was like, this can't be normal. What's wrong with me? Now, I also want to say to you guys that I am very lucky. I don't suffer from bipolar disorder. I don't suffer from depression. I don't have other mental illnesses that a lot of people have. And when you're trying to get sober, dealing with that's very hard. So I know I had an easier path than some folks did, because what was wrong with me was alcoholism. Now, what happened? My girlfriend, I'm so shallow. My girlfriend lost weight. She got thinner, and she looked good. And I'm like, "What happened? What did you do?" And she said, "I stopped drinking." And I went, "Oh." And she said, this is what got me sober, I swear to God. She said, "Wouldn't it be nice not to have to think about it? Not to have to plan my hangovers." Did you have to plan your hangovers? I had to plan my hangovers because I knew I would be in bad shape. This applies a lot to women, some men too, but mostly, you know, you girls know what I'm talking about. You have to figure out how you're going to get home and how you're not going to end up in the bed that I talked about earlier. You know, you're not going to end up in the wrong bed, and you're not going to be taken advantage of, and pardon me, but you're not going to be raped. But that's happened to most of us in this room, including me. Because that's what happens to women who are not in control of their own faculties because they are addicted to alcohol and drugs. And that's what happened to me in New York twice. Not once, twice. Once between husbands. Oh, God. Anyway, so I've had a couple of husbands, by the way. I had a starter spouse, we call them in New York, which was I was 20 and, you know, right out of college, and I got married to a lovely man who, you know, okay. But then that lasted about 5 years, and I ran off with the bass player in another band, and that all happened. And I ended up, like I said, my dad came and got me in New York, and I went to Virginia, ended up getting in a band and marrying my drummer. But I knew he was going to leave me if I didn't clean up my act. I could feel it coming because he's a nice guy. You know, you marry the nice ones. You try to anyway. You marry the nice ones, and he was a good guy, and I knew that if I, you know, did him wrong, it wasn't going to work out. He didn't like when I drank. He just thought, you know, you're just stupid. You repeat yourself, and, you know, you're not fun to be with and all this sort of stuff. So my girlfriend, when she got thin, I went, "How did you do that?" And she said, "I went to AA." And this is back in 87, and I'm like, "What's AA?" Yeah, I didn't know. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it. And she said, "Well, I'll take you to this meeting in Maryland. And I went with her to this meeting, and I don't exactly remember what happened, because, you know how when you're still kind of in the throes of it, I didn't know what happened, but all of a sudden, I knew that I wasn't alone in what was wrong with me. And I knew that something specific was wrong with me. That they said I had an illness. And unlike a lot of people who are really mad when they find out they're alcoholic and they're like, oh, I was thrilled because I literally didn't know what was wrong with me. I'd given up hard drugs. I'd given up liquor. How can wine hurt you? What? It didn't make sense to me. But I found out that alcoholism is a disease and that alcoholism is progressive and that it gets worse as you get older. And that's why I had the blackout. You know, I hadn't had it before and I had it. You know, why? Had I driven drunk? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But I, you know, it never crossed my mind that that was a problem. You just, you know, pull off the side of the road and go sleep for a while and then wake up and drive some more, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's the kind of thing that we do without thinking twice, you know, because we think we're okay. And to finally find out, oh, my God, there is really something wrong with me. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a first nighter. I came to AA and I never left. And I'm lucky. I know I'm lucky, but I came, I was ready, I was 35 years old, and I was married, I hadn't had children yet, and I got sober, and my husband at the time, who's a very nice man, and we were married for 20 years, and he is a good man, and he's happily married to someone else now, and we get along, because AA helps you have a good divorce as well as a good marriage, and anyway, I got sober, and I never left. And so I started to look at what I had to do to get sober and to stay sober. And one of the things I did have to do was go to speaker meetings, which is why I'm willing to do a speaker meeting, because I had to hear somebody else like talk, and some of you girls are shaking, oh yeah, I did that, you know? I mean, I had to hear somebody else go, yeah, I did that. I also heard stories that didn't apply to me. People that had DUIs, people who'd driven and killed somebody. You know, that could have, and I had to think about there, but for the grace go I. Okay, I had to think about that. Now, the other thing is, so here I was, so we're going to start doing, how are we doing? Okay, the steps. Okay, so what happens is you have to take the steps of AA, and I got a sponsor. I have a sponsor now, by the way. I had the same sponsor for 33 years, and she has passed on. She was lovely. But Sandra was my sponsor for most of my recovery. And I got her about 3 months into my recovery. Okay? You need a sponsor. Don't do this by yourself. And also, I tend to speak in declarative sentences. Like, I'm going to say, don't do this. I'm going to yell at you. It's all suggestions. Okay? It's not. That's how I talk. So anyway, I got a sponsor. And they said, you have to do the steps. Because if you don't do the steps, and they were mean in the old days. The little old ladies were not nice. They would hand you $20 and say, come back when you're serious. I don't want to waste my time if you're not willing to do the work. Because I can go help somebody who's ready. So if you're playing with this, good luck. God bless you. I'm not going to help you. Nothing personal. But if you're ready and you're willing, and they said, are you willing to go to any lengths, even though you haven't had a DUI? Even though you haven't lost everything? But I didn't have anything. I didn't have kids yet. You know, I didn't have any of that stuff. I kept my life small. That's how I managed that. So I was willing. And I said, yes, I am willing. And I began the step work. Step one, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. You know who the power greater than myself was? You. I did not have a God in my understanding in this place for about 10 years. Just so you know, you don't have to have a God in here. You just don't drink between meetings. Okay? You can get it. God will find you eventually. Don't worry about it. That means a lot of people get all caught up, oh, I have to find God. No, you don't. You just have to not drink between meetings. Keep coming back. God will find you eventually. It takes time for some of us. Those of us who were not brought up in traditional Christian background or something like that can take time. That's okay. Just don't drink between meetings and you'll be okay. And it says, you know, and so we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. It's not the last drink, it's the first drink. They used to say, you know, all the time that it's the engine, not the caboose that kills you. It's the engine, not the caboose. I don't understand why one isn't enough. I don't understand, but it's the way the brain works. Once our brain shifts into alcoholism, it's no longer desire. It's survival. Our brain thinks we need it to survive, so it's going to come up with a reason. If you had my life, you'd drink too. You know, if that had happened to you, you'd drink too, wouldn't you? You're going to come up with a reason. And so what you have to recognize is that your brain is your enemy, and you do, you know, as what we used to say in the old days, you know, your brain's a bad neighborhood. You do not want to walk around in there alone. So you've got to get help. You've got to get a sponsor. In the old days, we did the steps right away. We didn't mess around. First 90 days, you got going on those steps, and you didn't play. Now, there are exceptions. I'm just going to mention this, ladies. You have serious child abuse issues. Sometimes this can be too much and it can carry you. So please be careful if you have some stuff going on. You know what I mean? But as a rule, usually the best thing to do is get going with this. Get a sponsor who you like the way they look or you like the way they sound. It doesn't matter. Just find somebody who'll listen to you for a minute. Then remember that you're not paying them and they don't have to do this for you. Remember that. It's all grace. They're being nice to you. So even if you don't like what they have to say, you say thank you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like what my sponsor had to say, but I had to listen to her. It really annoyed me. I don't like doing what other people tell me to do. It annoys me, okay? But I had to do that. So step one, I came. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. You, the group, you know? And I used to think about, like, things like suspension bridges. You can't make one of those by yourself. You have to bring a lot of people in. I need the group. It's not one person. Because the hand of AA has to always be there, but that's not always my hand. I might not know how to help some man, especially. I might not know how to help some women who've been through stuff that I can't even imagine. So, you know, we have to, it's the group, it's the larger group. That's what we do. So I came. I came to. That's step two. Step three, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Step three, that's where we are. Made a decision to turn my will over to the care of God as I understood God, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. I had to turn my will over. Now, I am a self-will run riot. As Casey, you know, I'm an extrovert. I'm a performer. I've had a little bit of fame. I'm all this stuff out there, and I'm thinking, I'm all that. And I had to let go of that. And I had to have the humility. And somebody said to me in a meeting one time, they're like, Brooksy, a car mechanic can fix your car. He doesn't have to be smarter than you. We know how to stay sober. You don't. You can learn how to stay sober from somebody who's not smarter than you are. You can learn how to stay sober from somebody who doesn't look like you. There was a man in a meeting who used to say, I'm mud and I'm a drunk. And he didn't like black people, and he didn't like gay people. And guess what? A black lesbian got him sober. Everything changed. Everything changed for him. He had to turn his will and his life around because everything changed. So step one, came. So what I say, one, two, three. Came to believe. Okay? That's step one, two, three. So if you're here, you're doing steps one, two, and three right now. Okay, you're already here doing steps one, two, and three. Now here's the hard part, and it really isn't the hard part. Step four. Everybody gets completely freaked out about step four, that they've got to write something down, and they have to start looking at their own stuff. Why? Because what you want to do is you want to clean up the wreckage of the past. Why? So you're not sitting in anxiety cleaning up the wreckage of the future. That's why. You got to clean up the wreckage of the past, which means you actually have to take a look at all the crap you did back then. Because we're real good at pretending that nothing's wrong. I'm good. It's okay sleeping in my car. What's the big deal? I don't get it. Why is it bad? Right? We do that. We minimize. Make it smaller so it doesn't seem so bad. Why? So that we can drink again. Real simple. There's a reason we do that, so we can drink again, right? Okay. So step four. If you can't, if you're having trouble with that, just take a piece of paper, write the numbers 1 through 10, and just start, write down 10 people's names. Just start. You know, 10 people's names of people that annoy you or that you owe, you know, something to or whatever. Doesn't make any difference. Just get started with it. Then you can use the big book format if you want. There's all kinds of formats and stuff. You can get all deep. But just get going with it. And make sure you ask somebody to sponsor you. Because if I didn't have my sponsor, I wouldn't have known what to do. She helped me to, like, and she was about a year and a half more sober than me, I think, at the time. And Sandra, I just love Sandra. But she was real sweet to me, and she wasn't mean to me. Because some people do need a drill sergeant. I did not. I didn't want somebody being mean to me. I want somebody nice to me. And she was like, you know, you're going to be okay, and, you know, you can do this. And I went ahead, and I did my fourth step, and I wrote everything down, and then I did my fifth step. Now, this is what I want to talk about the fifth step. No hope of reward. When you do a fifth step, if anyone in here is a sponsor, you don't do that to get paid. You don't do that with anything but just out of wanting to save your own ass, really, to be frank, to save your own skin. You have to help other people. But the other thing is to remember is that the sponsor is just giving freely of their time. There's no reward for them. They're not, except it may be in heaven, but also the reward is that you yourself go, wow, that happened to me. You know how that is? You know, your child, you know, and you realize that the sponsee is helping you more than you ever thought that they would. I have sponsees that I've had for 25, 30 years. You know, most people don't make it, though, by the way. You all do know that. Like, I've been to a lot of funerals, and a lot of people don't make it. But so you help them anyway. But, Susie knows what I'm going to say. Don't keep helping them if they're not willing to do the work. Because what you're doing is you're depriving someone who's ready. Think of it that way. Not because, don't feel guilty, like, oh, you know, they're going back out. I was helping this one lady. I remember one time she looked about 80. She was 40 years old, 4 relapses in a row. She was a mess. Finally, I said, I'm not going to your funeral. I just can't do it. Enough's enough. Because, you know, she didn't want, she couldn't. I don't know if she didn't want to or couldn't. Because this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Am I right? Yes. It's very hard to stay sober. I wrote a song about it. He was playing it earlier. He called, whoever said it was easy? Those of us who are even in this room are the winners. We used to also say that, too, all the time. If you're here, you're a winner. You're a winner today because you're not drinking at this very minute. So God bless you. You're here. You're doing the next right thing one day at a time. That's all that really matters. And so step 4, you know, you begin, you make a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself. But that's also the good stuff. You don't only put the bad stuff. You start to look at your whole self again, and you start to find that maybe there's something in there that's worth keeping. Because the reason you want to use AA is that you want to keep living. And if you don't want to keep living, then what's the point? You know what I mean? And a lot of us don't want to keep living when we get here. You know that. I don't, you know, I'm talking straight. You know, a lot of us, you know, we're like, what's the point? What AA will do for you as a result of this, as the result of the steps, is provide a spiritual awakening that will awaken you to the fact that there is a purpose for you to be on this planet, even when it's hard. Right now I'm going through something extremely difficult. My daughter lost her baby. She was stillborn just 2 weeks ago. And it was her first, and I'm going through that right now. And you know where I am? I'm at a meeting. Why? Because I don't have the luxury of not going to meetings. I have to go. If I want to help her, I have to be here. I have to help you. I have to help you. If I'm going to help my daughter, I have to help you. Because I can't help her without being here, staying sober one day at a time. And it doesn't matter that I got 37 years. Susie knows I'm at the meetings. That's where I come, and I put it out there, and I tell you guys the truth, because I can't pretend that I'm not brokenhearted right at the moment. I am. However, silver threads. What AA teaches you is to find that. She can have other children. She's healthy. She didn't have to have a C-section. They gave her medicine so she doesn't have to lactate. You girls know what I'm talking about. They took care of that. So she can have, her husband loves her. How many of us have that? I don't right at the moment. Thank you very much. You know, not everybody's got that. She's got that. You know, so there are silver threads among those, you know. So, but you have to stay sober to experience the benefits of recovery. Okay, so let's keep going on the steps. Okay, 6 and 7. All right. So 5 is you share it. Share it. And don't be afraid. They did everything you did. Don't, just trust me. Everyone, everybody's done it all. You don't have to worry about that. Just do it. Then comes the true work of AA. Because what we used to say in the old days was when you did a 4th and 5th, now you're in AA. You're in AA. You've got to stay. You don't get to leave now. You've done 4 and 5. You've got to stay. Do you want to stay? Here's how you learn how to stay. Steps 6 and 7. Why? What are 6 and 7? They're like one paragraph in the big book. It's not a big deal. Oh, that's nothing. I got that, right? Oh, no. 6 and 7 are the rest of your life. Because what it's saying to you is that, we're entirely ready to have God remove the defects of character, which means you're finally looking at yourself honestly and going, yeah, I'll be honest, I talk too much. I'll be honest, I think I'm smarter than you are. You know, I have a lot of character defects that aren't great, you know, that aren't necessarily perfect. What does that make me? Human. Perfectly human. And I'm okay, and I, you know, I'm a little old lady now. I don't care what you think. Nothing personal, but I just don't care what you think anymore. That's wonderful. Such a blessing. I really don't mind being a human being anymore. I don't mind being imperfect. It's really okay for me to be imperfect today. That hasn't always been true, and it hasn't always been true in recovery. But that's the thing. Perfectionism is your enemy. It is your enemy in AA. Step 7, I like that it goes to shortcomings. It's nicer than character defects, don't you think? Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. So you're asking the God of your understanding, who for me isn't a man, I can't say him, but anyway, that's just me. And some people, you know, have that, and I really admire that, but I just don't have it. But I have to humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. It's like I have to, but how are you going to do that if you don't know what they are? How are you going to do that if you don't know what they are? So that's what 4 and 5 start, it kicks your ass, and you're supposed to, okay, this is, you know, and you're talking to somebody about it, and wow, maybe I'm more selfish than I thought. Maybe I don't think about other people quite in the way I should. Maybe I should start trying to help other people more. Maybe I'm getting better at being nicer. That's a good thing. I'm getting better. I can see the advances. I can see that I'm getting better at stuff. So 6 and 7 is ongoing. You keep working on it. And as the layers of the onions peel away, you get healthier. You do. Because it doesn't say we might recover. It says we do recover. If. What's the only caveat? If we have, which is a great word, caveat. What is the only caveat? That we have the capacity to be honest. And that's not honest with me telling you everything about me. That's honest with yourself. Get honest with yourself. Don't lie to yourself. Lie to everybody else if you have to, but don't lie to yourself. Because that's what's important. Okay, so then we move on to steps 8 and 9. Make a list of all persons you had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. Okay, this is also a lifelong thing, but you do the beginning ones at first. You look after your mom and dad or whatever, blah, blah, blah. You do that stuff at the beginning. You work on that. And then you make direct amends whenever possible. That can happen over time. You'll think of stuff, and then you make direct. You tell somebody, "I'm really sorry." I'll give you an example. There was this girl. She was about 10 years younger than me. She was dating a bass player in my band. She was trying to sleep with my husband. I mean, she was a pain in the neck. She was doing all this stuff and trying to get me fired from my job. I mean, just awful stuff, awful stuff. And I was just okay. I couldn't think of any reason why I would have to make an amends to her. Till years later, my husband ran into her in the Safeway, and I realized I was a terrible role model. I was 10 years older than that girl. I should have been behaving like an older sister, telling her how, you know what I mean? Instead, I was as bad as she was, you know? So I wrote her a letter, and I said, "I'm really sorry. I couldn't have been a better example." And we're friends now. I mean, that's what happens. You do make friends. It is kind of fun. Okay, so that's, okay, 10, continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admit it. Okay, this is so that it doesn't build up. And I've been talking to a few people who've had some relapses after long-term recovery. They probably haven't been doing step 10 on a regular basis because it's really easy to stop doing it. And all you have to do is take 3 deep breaths before you go to sleep and go, just check in with yourself. Just give yourself a minute to check in with that step 10. You can do it during the day, too, but it's good to do it right before you go to bed. Just so that then you can sleep, and you sleep better. You get better sleep when you do it, okay? So it's really important that you do the step, that step 10 becomes sort of routine. Okay, we're good. Now, step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood and praying only for knowledge of his will for us, the power to carry that out. Okay. Like I said, it took me years to get a God in here, like a God, like a supreme being, you know, that kind of thing. I really still, after 37 years, don't have a real concrete idea. However, I know I'm not God. And I also know that a power greater than myself has restored me to sanity. And I also know that too many... I had a real good friend today. He goes, is it odd or is it God? You know, those coincidences, are they? Like, well, what just happened with my daughter, God bless her, and it's you know, my son said something. My son's got 6 years, by the way. My son was a fentanyl addict. Okay, so don't think I don't know. And he's got 6 years sober now. And he got a PhD in a sober house in L.A. And so now he's a physicist, and he's married, and he's doing great. And he was on the East Coast when my daughter lost the baby, and he came. And he was there, and he was present, which he was not when my mother died, and he was high, you know. But he was there for his sister. And I'll tell you one more. My mother, God rest her soul, my mother started trying to get... She was a minister's wife, right? I told you my daddy became a minister. And she didn't think a Southern woman from the South, born in 1927, who's a minister's wife, could be an alcoholic. She just didn't think, you know, she didn't think that. And so for 10 years, four rehabs. Mother's, you know, a mother was up to 17 shots of bourbon a day to get straight. She had to get in the middle of the night and take a shot of bourbon. Sweetest lady, never swore. I'd teach her how to swear. You know, sweet. You know, she and finally, she's dying in the hospital at age 70. And I'm talking to one of my AA friends, and he's going, you're going to have to let her go. You know, you're going to have to let her go. She had neuropathy in her hands and feet. She had the liver was going, the whole thing. And my sister, who's a minister also, she goes, Mama, you're not bad. You're just sick. Light went on. We got 18 more years with her. She picked up her 18-year chip 3 days before she died at 89. She was helping a lady get a new liver. I know. It's never too late for the miracle. You know, I mean, people are like, well, you got sober. Oh, I watched my mother, you know. And it was so hard to watch your family members, you know, going through that kind of pain and suffering. You know, it's just so hard. And, you know, why couldn't she get it before, you know, I got it. What's wrong? You know, what happened? But she finally did get it. So it's never too late. So if you're old and you're thinking you can't do it, you can. You can. And so do stick around, because that was my mother. And I come from a family of alcoholics. You know, I mean, it's a family disease. And so anyway, now, so step 11, talk through prayer and meditation. I'm a lousy meditator. I pray with my feet. I tend to move more. I have to do moving meditation. I don't sit well. Every once in a while. I'm getting better at doing that. Prayer also. I pray in my car. I look at the roof of the car. Okay, God. I mean, that's literally how I do it. Okay. I do go to church sometimes now. I do, you know, I have, I'm a spiritual being. I've done a lot of work with sort of nature and all that sort of stuff. That's sort of where my spirit lies. So I do all that nature work and everything with other women friends who are more into that kind of thing, you know, less religious and more spiritual. And that's kind of where that's how my spiritual life has evolved. Yours can evolve however you want it to, but it must evolve. And just lady this morning picked up a 5-year chip, and I'm like, yep, now's the time. Kick it up. Got to kick it up. Because if you don't pick up your spiritual life, you'll relapse. I mean, that's just been the experience I've seen. I mean, you know, people, if you don't do it, you'll relapse. So just remember to do that. Okay, now, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, not a result, the result of these steps, what are we supposed to do? We have to carry the message to alcoholics, right? That's what we have to do. And it says, practice these principles in all our affairs, which means I have to be nice to you when I don't like you, which means I have to let the guy in front of me when I'm driving, which means that I had to stop being quite so vulgar. I love to swear. It's so much fun. And I have to try not to do that because it offends some people. You know what I mean? I don't know why, but, you know, it does. I'm kind of teasing, but kind of not. And so anyway, that's all happened. And I only have a few more minutes, so I'm just going to tell you. So for 37 years, I've been sober. In sobriety, I've had two children. My son is 35 and my daughter is 32. They've never seen their mother drink. That was the best gift I could have ever given them. And my son, when he had 5 years sober, because I told him I couldn't help him, I said, I'm going to go help these women over here. You're going to have to get... And he got sober on his... You know, he did the right thing. He came to me and he said, Ma, I knew it would work. That always makes me cry because I saw it at home. He saw it. He saw it work. I brought... You know, he saw that he could get sober. And he saw his his grandmother, you know, and she spoke at my 20th anniversary, and he went up to Grandma and said, Grandma, you're so brave. He saw, he knew what it takes to stay sober, and so I've been very lucky. And I'm really healthy. I'm 72. I look amazing. And why? Because I'm healthy. Why am I healthy? Because I stopped drinking in 1987. I stopped smoking in 1990. I don't eat hardly any sugar. I exercise. I have a spiritual life. I have a community. And all of those things are what it says. If you go to any of these books about how to live a long life, I'm doing all the stuff it tells you to do. AA sets you up to live a healthy elder life so that you can give back. And what it does do is it gives you back those 15 or 20 years you lost, if you want it. But you have to stay. You can't keep playing at it, going in and out, knocking, you know, you cannot. If you do that, you'll pay the price. I've been very lucky. I haven't paid the price. Now, also, I've been able to live a phenomenal music life. I was a children's musician when my kids were little. I had a husband, God bless the alimony, don't worry, I'm not an idiot. And the deal was with that, I know. But as my kids got older, I got back in the music business. And I've had 3 top 10 albums in my 60s on the folk charts. Not Billboard, but on the folk charts. I mean, I was a folk musician, and I got to do it again. Why? Because I'm healthy, and because I'm sober, and because I give back. And I can take the credit that is due me, but I give the credit to AA. The truth is, I wouldn't have any of this without you guys. I couldn't do any of this without you. It's all about you, and it's all about me staying sober one day at a time. And I have good health. I have children that love me. I had a decent divorce. My ex-husband and his wife are my friends. That's crazy. That would never have happened without AA. You know what I mean? Because you learn how to be kind and humble and not be an idiot and not, like, run your car. You know how you do. All the crazy things that you do when you're mad at someone that you love that doesn't love you anymore for whatever the reason. I don't do that sort of stuff anymore. And when my daughter lost the baby 2 weeks ago, I said, I'm going to come to a meeting and I'm going to tell you the truth about where I am. And that pain doesn't go away just because you're sober. You get to feel it, which doesn't feel good. Trust me. It's hard. But that's the key here, is you get your feelings back. And we'll help you any way we can. Everyone here will help you. But it's up to you. And like I said, in the old days, the little old ladies would hand you the $20 and say, come back when you're serious. So I'm handing you each a $20 bill, except I don't have any money, but you know what I mean. Metaphorically. And come back when you're serious. Take this seriously, because then you can have the kind of life that I have had, which has been phenomenal. I have had a wonderful life in AA. And it's looking like I'm going to have another 20 or 30 years. I'll live to be 100. That's what they say. If you have a kid at 40, I have my daughter at 40, they're most likely to live to be 100. So I've got all this time left. And I'll tell you one more thing, because then we're going to start wrap it up. I was in England, because I was touring England and Scotland just last year, and I went to a meeting, an AA meeting in this old church, and there's this lady, and she came in this bright red coat, and she was like 80-something, and she had 50 years sober that day, right? And she's lovely British accent and all that. And someone said, well, do you need a ride, ma'am? And she's like, oh, no, I'll take the bus, you know, and off she went, 50 years sober, just bright as a penny, just awesome. And I'm like, that's going to be me. I'm going to be like that at 50 years. I'm at 37. I got a little ways to go. But I'm going to recommend to all of you, don't let the misery, what we also used to say is that, you know, stick around. And, you know, and in a year, if you want to go back out, we'll refund your misery. Yeah. We'll refund your misery. Anyway, thank you very much. And thanks for letting me share.
Me a prayer, but I don't know if anyone heard. I lit up a votive, examined my motives, feeling just a little absurd. Cause I've been trying and trying and trying so hard to give unconditional love. But it doesn't come easy for someone like me, broken and battle scarred. I went to the forest, lit me a fire, and I sat there watching it burn. I thought about somebody losing a loved one who doesn't know which way to turn. And I've been trying and trying and trying so hard to give unconditional love. But it doesn't come easy for someone like me, broken and battle-scarred. And who ever said it was easy? You know they were telling you lies. Who ever said it was easy? Not I.
Easy. No, I wouldn't tell you no lies.